Welcome, boys and girls. Thank you for tuning in. This is Red Ice TV. I'm Henrik Pungen. I'm the founder of Red Ice. We have headquarters both in North America and in the heart of Scandinavia as well. We are currently building a TV channel, a network. We're expanding in our coverage. And you might have seen some of our live coverage already, of course. We're going to do a lot more of those. Lots of things brewing behind the scenes. More segments, more reporters. That's why it's very important to have you guys' support. You know, help us out from the outside, as it were. We're trying to do this outside of the corporate structure as well. No ads, no sponsorship, nothing like that. So we do rely on you guys being out there and helping us keeping up with our momentum of growth and all that good stuff. So super important that you help us out to fight against globalization and, of course, the globalists as well. So today, guys, on the show, we have Pax Dickinson. His latest project is Counterfund. We'll talk more about this here in a little bit. He's been involved with the three others building a platform for fundraising. It's kind of a Kickstarter in a way, a little bit some of the other components. We'll get into that too. But also, of course, it's a very important project in terms of, you know, how do we fund projects? How do we achieve this when we're in this time that we are with censorship and all this kind of stuff? So, Pax, thanks for coming on. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Tell us a bit about not only Counterfund, but tell us first about what kind of led you up to that point and how you find yourself in this position that you are today.
Sure. You know, I used to be the CTO of Business Insider. I got in trouble with the feminists and the SJWs and lost my job. That was back in 2013. And I've been just kind of in the movement ever since, doing different things. And now I'm trying to do Counterfund, which is sort of like Patreon. But what we're going to do is we're going to kind of bring together the whole movement. And the way it works is we have the people raising money on the site are actually going to be in control of the site. It's more of like a grocery store co-op than a actual like a company. So we're sort of and we're strictly ideologically based. We're going to actually vet people for compatibility with the alt-right. We're strictly anti-Marxist, strictly anti-SJW. And we're not an open platform. We're sort of an ideological crowdfunding platform that's in a way a little bit like a political party, not in the Democrat or the Republican sense, but more in the sense of like actually getting change in the streets. And so what we'll do is we're going to take 10% of all the money that's donated to all the people on the platform, which we'll be raising money in like a Patreon kind of style. But we're going to take 10% of that money and put it in a community fund and have the top influencers raising money actually be able to spend that money and choose how it gets spent. So there's skin in the game in the sense that there's money involved. And if we can take this sort of atomic movement and bring in a little bit of, not collectivism, but like to come together where we're voting on how to spend money. And then there could be a lot of ramifications of that where suddenly people are working together and suddenly it's not like a sort of dog eat dog, you know, zero sum world where, you know, there's a lot of infighting even right now. And maybe we can, you know, if there's money at stake, maybe people can come to the table and sort of resolve those things and find out where the common ground is.
Yeah, that's a good proposal. Let's dive into that a little bit more here later in detail. I do want to bring attention, though, because obviously a while back, as you said, you were fired. You were kind of hounded. Yeah. I remember the story now. You brought it to my attention. Yeah. I remember. That's right. That's the Pax Dickinson, of course.
That's me.
Tell us about what happened there just a little bit more for those who might not be familiar with the story.
Sure. The real issue was that I was pushing back against feminism in tech. The Donglegate thing happened. That was a big thing where they were getting people fired from tech just for telling a joke, a private joke to a friend that was overheard at a conference, and those guys got fired. And so I pushed back on things like that as CTO of Business Insider. And that was sort of, you know, what I wanted to do to like sort of help the tech industry, you know, to kind of stop this like political correctness gone mad. And it actually cost me my job. And they went and they dug up some old tweets that were, you know, jokes out of context. that were, admittedly, offensive jokes. But yeah, so what? It was it was taken out of context. I was quoting Mel Gibson.
There you go.
And, 3 years after the fact, no one remembered that Mel Gibson, said that his wife would be raped by a pack of niggers if she went out dressed like that. And so, my joke sort of fell flat 3 years later. Who knew? if I had known that joke was on there, I actually would have deleted it.
But,
It was from before I even had the job. At the time I made that joke, I probably had 50 followers. And then at the time I got fired, I probably had like 500. I wasn't even really that important.
So what do you think? I mean, obviously, okay. So we have this current PC modality. You can't make jokes about certain things, and we get all that. But I mean, that has to be an underlying factor, obviously, in how you've related to the current project with Counterfund, because we're seeing a lot of deplatforming. We're seeing a lot of people being pushed out or fired because of their opinions and stuff like that. And that doesn't. I don't know. I mean, do you think that that's going to begin to change at some point, or is the PC climate so hardcore? What do you think?
It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
People are being pushed out everywhere. And sort of what I want to do with Counterfund is provide some kind of a center where people can network together, and maybe we can start just employing each other and sort of exit from the SJW economy.
Yeah, and that has to be done, right? That's because otherwise, if we don't do it ourselves, then who's going to do it and all these kinds of things. So how do we, I know we're kind of diving into the technicalities of this, maybe a little bit prematurely, but I'm interested in this myself, because it seems that there's still obviously services that you guys need to use to be able to run these things, right? What prevents them from just coming to you guys and say, you can't have a, whether it's a merchant account or whether it's, I don't know, Braintree or PayPal or whatever it might be. How do you prevent that?
Yep. Well, PayPal is always sort of a problem. You can work with them, but it's always a little bit difficult. Bitcoin, of course, exists, but it doesn't have really the penetration quite yet. You can't build a company that's just relying on Bitcoin. Unless it's like some kind of niche tech thing. But and merchant accounts are a little more open. If you have a friendly bank, you can get a merchant account, and the credit card companies can't really do too much about that. There's also other ways that I can't really talk too much about without, setting my partners up for being attacked.
Keep those to yourself. It's probably a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, but when I built WeSearcher, and WeSearcher is still operating with PayPal and Stripe, and they get away with it, and so it's pretty they raise money for the Daily Stormer, and they're not kicked off Stripe, so that says something.
That's good. So, okay, I didn't know that you were helping to build WeSearcher as well. That's great. And of course, is it a similar thing here? Of course, they have bounties and things like this, but you can use it for other things as well. How does Counterfund differ from WeSearcher?
So Counterfund is more like Patreon, where WeSearcher is more like Kickstarter, where WeSearcher is really built for information. And it ended up being used for things like legal funds just because there was no one else to host them. But that's not really what WeSearcher was for. So Counterfund will be like directly for crowdfunding. And it's for, the Patreon model of like giving money to the people that you support. But in Counterfund, when you give money to someone, you're actually also giving them political influence within the party. And so the more money that those people get, the more likely they are to be elevated to the House of Lords, where they're actually be making decisions. We're not a democracy, but we're more of an aristocratic republic.
I was going to say, tell us about that Illuminati pyramid you guys have on the, on the website.
So like a party member is anybody who gives money to the site, right? You could give money like $5 a month. You could give to any of the influencers on the site. The influencers on the site are people who are content creators, anybody who is like the kind of person who would raise money on Patreon and have fans. And those people have to apply to me to get onto the site. And I'm not going to let anybody on the site unless they are ideologically compatible and they have high quality content. They don't have to be ideologically pure, but they have to be compatible. So no leftists, you know, you're not allowed on. I was making jokes on Twitter yesterday about how I would send everybody like a gas chamber meme. And if you don't laugh, you're not in. And so this is
it's pretty solid vetting process there.
Yeah. So like the idea of Counterfund is that we are the right wing counterculture. I sort of look at what's happening in the world as it's like the 60s counterculture, right? Except that was left. And now we're the right wing counterculture. And like the 60s counterculture, we have a stranglehold on comedy and being edgy and, you know, being anti-establishment and exciting. There's nothing like that on the left anymore. They don't, you know, they are the establishment now. They're boring. They're not funny. They're not allowed to be funny.
Do you think the, you know, the leftists' position was never, when they came and approached, you know, the so-called conservative structure at the time, 60s, 50s, even later 70s and 80s, they were talking about, well, we need a diversity of opinions. Our voice needs to be heard, yada, yada. It was never about that, was it? It was about them winning, getting in there and winning the debate and taking over, basically.
When they were the one who were having speech suppressed, they were for free speech. But now they're the ones suppressing speech, so they're no longer for free speech. It was always just a tool. I mean, that's, you know, typical of communist movements, really. They're for free speech when they're on the outside, and then as soon as they get in power, they clamp down on every kind of speech.
Yeah, exactly. So now maybe they understand why even the conservative movements at the time said, you know what, these groups are subversive. They're going to destroy our structure. They're going to be dangerous. But obviously now, you know, PACs, they are in that position. They have a strangled hold on the cultural narrative, which dominates politicians and the media. And of course, there's a feedback loop in that too. But, you know, when they go after people who have a wrong opinion, whether that be on Twitter or YouTube, whatever, and get those people kicked off, or even worse, let's say fired, like in your case.
Right.
That is obviously a threat of a means of being able to support yourself, right? So they're in, if you ask me, they're in dangerous territory by having that kind of behavior. What do you think?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, you know, but really what they do is when they got me fired and blacklisted from, you know, the mainstream tech industry, they created a monster. And that's what they're doing to all of us. Like, the more people they kick out of their establishment economy, the more viable our outsider economy becomes.
Yeah. And it's like it's not quite like a society within a society, but of course it is a fracturing that's occurring to a certain extent, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yep. And that's like kind of how I model Counterfund is really similar to the way Hezbollah is like a government within a government in Lebanon and provides hospitals and garbage collection and all that kind of stuff. Like, why don't we have that? Why don't we have our own, you know, everything? Why don't we have our own YouTube? Why don't we have our own Google? Why, you know, we shouldn't use any of those things. I shouldn't have to spend money to leftist companies. I should be able to spend every dollar that I need to spend within the movement, you know, with somebody who shares my views.
Now, for of course, a site that you guys are running now and have started, that makes sense. But for being on a platform which, of course, has access to a lot of people, that doesn't make sense. Like YouTube, right? I mean, you want to be where the people are. You want to be where the audience is to a certain extent. But that's what's so difficult. Sure. I mean, we can create, you know, the True Tube or whatever else it might be, but then they'll just sit on their own little corner and never really engage in anyone, right? And anyone's
But you still need to have something because, you know, YouTube is letting you be on there. Like, you know, they may change their mind at any time.
Absolutely.
And then you're gone. Yep. So you need to have some kind of fallback where you can still spread your content and you can still reach the audience and you're not like under their thumb.
Yeah, no, I get that. And it depends, I guess, what the company kind of, how they see themselves and what role they see. I remember that the Twitter CEO, Jack, was it Dorsey? He obviously said that he saw Twitter as a utility, which obviously puts him in a very different category, of course. If you're a private website and it's, you know, free markets or whatever, and you want to do your own thing, sure, to a certain extent, I get that and I kind of agree. But when they get so big that they are now, And I mean, YouTube is an influencer when it comes to politics, when it comes to spreading your opinions and stuff. And so I'm actually for some kind of regulation and control to make sure that a diverse opinion gets to be on there. What do you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that to take like some kind of doctrinaire libertarian view that, you know, oh well, they're private companies and there's no, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. That's not, you know, free speech. That actually is free speech because, you know, the First Amendment is about government restriction of speech, but free speech itself is a cultural value. And, you know, as a cultural value, if we are supporting that cultural value, then we need to have free speech on the major institutions in our society, which are run by private companies. And so I definitely support, you know, some kind of government antitrust action against Twitter to say, you know, you can't restrict speech based on its content. I definitely be for that. I hope the people suing Donald Trump for blocking them, I hope they win. Because if following Donald Trump is a human right, then me having a Twitter account is also a human right.
There you go.
How can I follow Donald Trump if I don't have a Twitter account?
Right.
I'm banned from the platform.
Exactly.
So I'm rooting for them. I think their legal theory is bullshit, but I hope they win anyway.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Even if they, you know, even if they matter to win or not, whatever, so be it. But I think that we should fight on every front that we can. We shouldn't make it easier for them than what it is. I think traditionally, you know, so-called conservatives, whatever you want to call them, but, you know, the people on the right or whatever, they've been more prone to kind of take a step back and, okay, fine, you know, we'll let you in or we'll let you dominate this, we'll take you over, we take a step back. And all of a sudden, like now, we've lost all ground, we don't have any bearing, we're not in control of the culture anymore. So it's time that we fight back, right?
Right, yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's, you know, the leftists got in by, not by being principled, by, you know, by being hypocrites, by doing whatever was necessary. I mean, they say it, by any means necessary. Like, they're not shy about it. Like, we need to have some kind of the same attitude as that. You know, there's a lot of worry about, like, hypocrisy and, oh, well, you know, shutting down their speech, that's hypocrisy if we're for free speech. It's like, it's not hypocrisy to shoot the enemy. You know, you don't have to shoot your own guys in the back to like be like, oh, no, I'm not a hypocrite because I'm, you know, I'm shooting my own guys too. Like, no, you shoot the enemy, you know?
Well, it is a war.
Hypocrisy is aside.
Everything is fair in love and war, as they say, right? And this is a war.
That's right. That's right. And the winners write the history.
Yeah.
So first you win and then you can justify whatever you had to do.
I thought about this the other day. I mean, think about it. You know, when you see the ULOC professor like Eric Clanton, right? He's literally trying to kill people. That's what they could have done, the move he did there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So think about that. I think that the attorney, Dan Siegler or whatever his name was, his position of defense was, well, these people had Nazi symbols and KKK symbols, and we felt literally threatened on the ground, right? So they're taking the position, this is self-defense.
Yep.
Okay. Well, according to those own standards, when they actually physically attack people like us, then of course we are also going to be in a position of self-defense. Sure. So it's what happens is that there's not de-escalation here happening here. It's the opposite way.
Right.
And it's them who have taken the first step. We have not gone after them. They just see it as a, I don't know what, a human right to defend themselves, and therefore they can violently go after us. It doesn't make sense, does it?
I don't get that at all. I mean, if a Nazi symbol is a threat, then a hammer and sickle is a threat to me.
That's right.
And so I see a hammer and sickle, and I'm acting in self-defense when I throw you out of a helicopter.
The people behind that symbol, they murdered, what, 10 times more than supposedly what the Germans
far
did,
more.
Right?
So yeah, far more.
We have like the upper hand.
They're 10 times as dangerous, at least, right?
Yeah. It's true. It is true. So where do you think this is going to go with the YouTube censorship and what we're seeing on Twitter right now? Is there any, I mean, I kind of asked you that before, but is there any way that we can turn this around and work with this and get the upper hand in this situation at all?
My kind of outlook for the future is one of even deeper polarization. I feel like the middle is being hollowed out, and like the moderate middle is like everyone's becoming an extremist. You know, everyone is unhappy with the state of the world, and you have the leftists think that they'd be happy if they had full communism. And, you know, the people on the right are like obviously greatly opposed to that. And so I think that we're going to see more polarization, and really like every company is going to have to decide if they're an SJW company or if they're not, because if you're not with the SJWs, then you're against them. That's really their attitude.
Yeah, let me so ask you about this. I mean, you obviously brought up this, you know, do we censor? Do we come in there or whatever? You saw some of the videos coming out in terms of the Shakespeare in the park and all that kind of stuff. Yep. What's your take on that? I mean, is that a good move? In a way, I get it. And obviously, yes. I mean, this is a theater production, which actually receives federal funding. I think they got like $40 million in total or something like that. And of course, to murder the president who's in charge of that federal government, it's kind of a little bit over the top. But at the same time, the Posobiecs and all those stands that these people are Nazis or whatever, I don't agree with that. It's just silly to me. What do you think?
Their tactics aren't totally the best, but I do support like the interruption of the play. I mean, they didn't shut the play down. They didn't come in there with bike locks and start smashing heads and masks and, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, they interrupted the play for, what, less than a minute probably. Mm-hmm. And then the play was finished. So, I mean, it really shouldn't have been a big deal. But then the fact that the media and the press, like, and the left made such a big deal out of it and freaked out is great. I kind of love that. And, you know, we just had an attempted political assassination attempt. And, you know, like, yeah, the guy didn't, he shot at Congress and he shot congressmen. And like, yeah, he didn't kill any of them, but only because his aim was terrible. Leftists, I guess they can't aim.
Right.
But I mean, you know, so it's completely legitimate to say like, hey, maybe you shouldn't do this production that involves assassinating the president, like in light of that we just had political assassination attempts like yesterday. Maybe like you should just chill, like, you know, for a moment and step back and say like, hey, you know, maybe this isn't right. So I think that the protest is totally legit. I'm not too keen on some of the rhetoric that the people who did the protest have been pushing since then. It's a little lame. And I don't think it's really, you know, asking for money to like help you like pay for your $1,000 fine, and you don't need that much money.
Oh, you're talking about the consequent fundraiser by the Rebel? Yeah,
it seems a little gauche to me. I don't know. It's just like leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Jump on that opportunity, man.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of get it. You know, I know the Rebel like has trouble making ends meet, and I understand that, and I think they generally do good work, but yeah, the optics are leave a little to be desired. But in general, I think I do support, you know, I do think it was kind of awesome that they interrupted the play. I think it was appropriate.
At least they're doing something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know like if that's like specifically the way we want to go, like, you know, to repeat that over and over. Maybe it's best to like silence the people who are silencing us directly. You know, so if someone supports the no platforming of the right, then they're a legitimate target for no platforming.
Right. That's a good point. And, you know, to a certain extent, you said that we have to point out double standards. We have to use all these things against them that they're using against us. But at the end of the day, it's difficult. I mean, I've always been one I'm for the truth, and I want that always to be one of the main guiding forces of everything. And I do believe that we have the truth on our side. So I think that that's fine.
Right.
But at the same time, just as you said before, this is also an existential battle. And in that, I don't think what I'm saying is I don't think that we have to lie. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that if it happens sometimes that we walk into our own double standard or something like that, you know what? Those cases, fine, whatever. If it helps us advance in the information war, right, or, you know, get the message out or whatever, sure, whatever. You know, who cares, right?
Yeah. And I mean, if the left is trying to silence people and no platform them in order to have them not speak, whereas we on the right, if we're silencing someone, it's basically just saying, hey, we want the silencing to stop. But if we're going to be silenced, then you are too. We would prefer a world where no one was silenced and everyone just got to speak their piece, but that doesn't seem to be on offer. And so if that's not on offer, and if we have to be shouted down every time we try to speak, then, you know, turnabout's fair play.
Yeah.
It's like a tit for tat, you know, in game theory. It's like, you know, the other guy keeps defecting in the prisoner's dilemma, then you have to defect too. You can't just keep cooperating in hopes that he's going to one day come to his senses and cooperate with you.
What do you think the government's role in all of this is going to be? Because right now it seems that the primary driving force of this is actually private companies more than anything.
Yeah.
It seems that we mention this all the time, but the globalist conglomerates and the big corporations and all this stuff, they have become the main, you know, moving factor in certain extents to you know, the population replacement, the PC culture, the liberal insanity, all this kind of stuff. Do you see the government's role as being somewhat balancing in this, or are they just going to be swept along, or they are being swept along, I guess, to a certain extent?
I don't have too much faith in the government, like, fixing our problem. I mean, I come out of kind of, I'm a recovering libertarian, and I still have my, you know, doubts and mistrust of the big government. I think that, you know, things are going to get worse before they get better. And what we need to do is try to build our own institutions and our own, you know, our own economy, really. You know, when it really gets rough is when we're going to need to have organization if we're going to hope to win. So the only way to do that is to build some institutions and try to, like, have some more, you know, organization. Like, the way the left, they're a machine. And we need to imitate that a little bit. We need to be better at this. We need to have, you know, we need to have, you know, we need to be more militant, just in the sense of, like, you know, hierarchy and orders and, you know, like, being able to, like, leverage our power. We have a lot of people and a lot of just atomic, everyone's all over the place, and there's no way to kind of get them to pull together, you know, in the ways that we agree on, which is, you know, we all disagree because the left is one thing and the right is really just everyone who's against the left. So we don't have that kind of, like, core motivating force of ideology behind us, because we're just kind of like a mishmash of ideologies that all hate the left. And right. So if there's some way to bring us together where we can find common ground and agree on common strategies, I think that's really powerful. And I think that's what we need to do.
So do you see Counterfund as being part of that? I mean, I think what everyone would like to know, I think what everyone wants to, the question is, what is the party fund, right? Well, what would that actually go to? And if they start using this site, as far as I understand it, then what you've explained is that it's only then people that actually, like, engage and if you will, get something out of the site, that also gets a stake in that fund and stuff, right? Tell us more about how that works.
Right. So the top people who are raising money on the site will be in the House of Lords, and they'll be able to decide on how to spend that money. I'm chairman, and so I will preside over the House of Lords. I don't have a vote, but I will have a bully pulpit. And so the kind of things that I would want them to spend that shared money on would be things to bring more people into the party. Like, if we could have job networking within the Counterfund, like if you're giving $20 a month or more to different influencers on Counterfund, then you have access to this, you know, job networking, you know, site that we build with the money, or maybe a shopping, you know, network kind of site, like a Google Shopping for only party aligned people, right? So you can keep your money in the movement, help people in the movement, hire from within the movement. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, brings us all together, and it could pay off a lot of dividends later on. Just like having that bare minimum of, like, required cooperation, it could be so powerful.
Why do you think we've been so bad at that so far? I mean, I just to clarify one thing, I mean, I think you're right when you say we have to be better organized and whatever, but generally I think people on the left are generally pretty sloppy, frankly, in comparison. But it seems that, of course, in many cases they've had the whole apparatus of as I said before, business and government behind them. They have millions of dollars at their disposal. I mean, yeah, just look at this theater play in Central Park. 40 million over, I don't know how many years it was, but I mean, imagine what we could do with that kind of money. I mean, it's insane.
Crazy, right? Yeah. Like, I look at Counterfund and I imagine, like, what if we got 10% of what, like, the GOP gets?
Right.
And what could we do with that? Like, it'd be amazing. You know, and yeah, like, the left, they are all over the place, but they're effective. they maintain their message discipline, and they led a long march through all of our institutions, and they control them all, and you can't argue with results.
Right. Yeah, no, I get you. But at the same time, of course, I think we're in a time now, too, when they're also starting to, the fracturing is also occurring within their movement, and there's so many. And I mean, it's not necessarily a good thing. We can, of course, use this and work with this to our advantage. But it's traditionally they haven't argued as much with each other as they're doing right now, I think, of different waves of feminism, different versions of political correctness. And one person who one day actually was a feminist or even a leftist is already all of a sudden booted out on the street, sitting on their ass because they said something which was, oh, is this inappropriate now? I didn't know.
Yep. Well, I mean, the left has always, to a certain extent, eaten its own, and that's sort of how they keep that message discipline, by defenestrating anybody who doesn't send the right signals at the right time, and they always got to keep up on what those signals are, and don't let yourself sending an old signal. You know, don't call, you have to call things by the right name, by the right leftist name that we're using this week, not last week's name.
It's like the Borg, and you don't have the, you haven't assimilated to the right updated version or something. Yeah.
Right. Because the left is just virtue signaling. And so there's not really any kind of coherent like goal. It's just to signal your superior holiness. And so because they don't have that goal, they have no way to ever stop. It can never stop. Like, it could be, you know, you could have full communism and they're still going to be signaling until like a Stalin comes along and executes everybody to his left and says, all right, I'm Stalin and I'm the most leftist. You know, if you say you're more Stalin than Stalin, I kill you. And then it stops.
Yeah, it's like, but we didn't want authoritarianism. Well, that's what you kind of are getting here.
Yeah, that's what you always get.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, it's ironic that, you know, really, if the left, when the left gets what they want, the most people who get killed are fellow leftists.
Yeah, of course.
They exterminate themselves. So they really, like, their best case scenario is more like a Pinochet on our side takes over and he kills far fewer leftists.
Yeah, and the rest are they can get away. They can like the Chileans. They can go to Sweden or something, a liberal paradise somewhere else.
Right. Sure.
It's insane. It is insane. But I mean, in a way, it kind of makes sense because I've always seen that type of leftism as a kind of a death cult to a certain extent. Yeah. It is one.
Absolutely.
It wants to destroy and disrupt. It's not a constructive ideology. Right. It's a destructive one. It's just about leveling. You know, whether that's the playing field or literally, you know. This is what they do, and to a certain extent, it's maladjusted individuals that are attracted to these kinds of systems. Because we could psychologize behind this, why this is or whatever, but to a certain extent, I think it's true when people say that they have such a bad internal environment that they feel comfortable when the external environment matches that. It makes them feel well adjusted to their own insanity to a certain extent.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely.
A bit later, I want to talk about, you know, your thoughts on the Islamification of Europe and some of the recent attacks in London and stuff like that. That's pretty interesting. There's a lot to go into that. Maybe we can save that for the second segment, though. But what else do you want to say about when it comes to, I don't know, censorship and what we should look out for, what you think is coming down the pipe with this stuff? I think one item, actually, that you did address, which was interesting, was the issue of us setting up our own institutions and building things ourselves and not being reliant on the other systems and stuff like that. And I completely agree with that. Do you think that there ever is going to be a point where that choice is going to be, I guess, dangerous for us? What I mean by that is that if we progress on the timeline that we're on right now with the development of technology and artificial intelligence, police states as a response to terrorism and these kinds of things, more and more control, basically, God knows where we're going to be in 40, 50 years from now. If we have not been in those institutions and have people like us kind of trying to balance things out there, but we've kind of set up our separate system, if you will, and not really engaged in that, is the conflict between these two different worlds at that point as something that you see is dangerous, if you see what I'm getting at, that if we disassociate and pull apart too much and not trying to actually control the opposite side, they can be a huge enemy in the future? Or how do you see that?
Well, like right now, We're in a position where we have no control over any of these institutions, and they can kick us off at any time. So we need to build our own institutions just to survive. And we definitely shouldn't abandon the mainstream institutions. We should try to maintain a presence there, but we need to have our own things so that when we fall back, especially in crowdfunding, because I think crowdfunding is really one of the key institutional like building blocks, because it's how your people actually raise money, and it's like direct economic, you know, benefit. If you're on Patreon and you're relying on that money, and then Patreon like pulls the plug on you, you're really screwed. You have nowhere else to go. And so like that's like a key piece of infrastructure that we really need. As far as, you know, and then YouTube, like that's like another thing that, you know, if YouTube kicks you off and you're like a creator who's monetizing videos, or even if YouTube doesn't kick you off, but they just demonetize you, like that's a hugely crippling blow to someone who depends on that kind of income. So like those are the kind of things that we really need to like build our own platforms for, so that, you know, people can make a living at being, you know, in our movement. And something that helps people when they get fired because they're part of our movement, where there's like alternatives to go to. And that's like, if we have those kind of alternatives, a lot of the people who have to be anonymous in order to speak will feel a lot braver. They'll feel like if they get purged, it's not the end of the world. It's not like the end of their life. It's not they're going to be homeless and their kids are going to starve. It becomes like there's an ability to still make it, to still survive, to still have a job, to still have a career. And those things are really key, because like we can't just be under this like thumb of the left and live in a climate of fear. We can't abandon the public square, but we also have to make ourselves independent from that kind of leftist pressure.
Yeah, it's a good point. There's a lot of things, of course, what you mentioned there in terms of us setting up our own institutions. What do you think about the media strategy? Just I'd be interested in hearing what you think about that, because as far as we are concerned, yes, we obviously use YouTube. We reach a lot of people there, but we don't necessarily have to have that service to like embed videos and stuff like that. And there's many others out there now too.
Right.
There's many refuge places that people can go.
Yep.
Up and coming video sites and stuff like that. But in terms of, I mean, obviously the decentralization of something is a very smart strategy. Whether it's government going after you or PC culture, it's going to be much more difficult for them to like strike out all the node points, right? So that's really a way to go, like network wise, right?
I think so. Yeah. I think, you know, we let 1,000 flowers bloom and, you know, and try to have as many targets for them as possible. Right. Like, Don't put all our eggs in one basket, but you know, we still have to have these backup systems that allow us to survive when we're under attack. It's very hard for people who aren't big to survive a leftist purge attack. I mean, they go after your family, they go after your job, they go after everything they can go after. And so the more that we have support networks for that kind of thing, I think that is something that really, really necessary, that we really need.
So what do you think is like next in that process for them? What is, I mean, obviously now when the alt-right is getting out and the attention of the mass consciousness out there, what are some of their responses to this going to be? Are they going to step up their game as well in terms of coming after people? Or what do you think is going to happen here? Polarization you mentioned, but more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think the purges are not going to stop and are maybe going to get worse. I mean, up until this past month or so, Patreon was generally pretty reasonable and didn't kick people off. And now like they're kicking people off for like almost nothing. They kicked, Wife with a Purpose off.
That's right.
For racism, when like she had like just videos of her kids and stuff. It was like, they're white kids, so it's racist, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what that means. It's insane. And so, you know, even there's certain institutions that seem like they're okay and seem like they're not totally converged. And then in a moment, they can come out and just start banning and purging everyone. So we really, we just have to not be forced to rely on those kind of kind of, you know, channels. We have the internet, and the internet is at least, you know, free, right? We can put up our own websites, but, you know, everything nowadays is like the Facebooks and Patreon and Twitter, and they're private platforms that are really important. And, you know, we don't control them, and they're absolutely controlled by our enemies. And, you know, anything we're allowed to do on them is, you know, subject to suspension and banning. And it's just an untenable situation.
And also, I must point out that they do obviously shoot themselves in the foot when they do all
they
these
do.
Things. And at the same time, I mean, when they go after the ALS, if you will, it shows everyone else that we have to use this as ammunition in our battles and stuff like that, obviously, and show that it's like, look, they hate you just because of the fact that you're not feeling guilty about yourself. That's
right.
Basically what it comes down to. So in that process, it's an ever moving and changing kind of dynamic where we have to adapt to the new circumstances. Yes. But use everything, all the situations to our advantage to prove to the world they are really out there to like just, you know, kick us off and we can't have our own, you know, we can't have our own things. We can't be proud about who we are.
Yeah.
It's an anti-white system. Yep. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when they do that, they really, every time they purge somebody, they really make alternatives that much more viable. The more people they purge, then the bigger the community of the purged becomes. And the more viable alternatives become. So they're loading the gun for us. They're helping us by purging people. You know, I mean, they purged me and now I'm building Counterfund. If I never got purged, I'd probably have some CTO job and, you know, I wouldn't be building this kind of thing. And so every person they purge is really just giving us more power. They don't even realize it.
They're taking the step to push you out into the next step, right, of the process,
right.
or
yeah,
what do you
absolutely.
Call it, to take that leap of faith and try to do something on your own instead, which is good, I guess.
Yeah.
We got to see it in the positive light, right?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, like you got to fight on the battlefield that's been created for you. And that's like the battlefield is that they're doing our recruiting for us by being so, you know, obnoxious and leftist and censorious. They create more of us every day. And,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
do they really think that it's like this is going to cause less people to come over to our side?
Yeah,
they're idiots.
Right, exactly. They're idiots. But they can't help it because, you know, they're an insane death cult. And so all they can do is signal. And that's what they do. And so they'll never stop signaling. And, you know, they'll never signal any less. So it's like just getting used to the fact that they're going to be doing that, and there'll be more and more of us all the time. I think I'm positioning Counterfund to be outside the Overton window. I think that, you know, we're the counterculture right. We're not the mainstream right. But, you know, I'm positioning it here in 2017 because in 2-3 years, that's going to be where the people are.
Good. I like that. I like that. So, so tell us what's the state of the site right now? Can people jump on and how could they get involved basically?
So right now we have a splash site up. We're taking donations to help us build it. We're working on the code of the platform, and we're working on the actual, the governance structure of how the House of Lords is going to work. It's, you know, kind of complicated. We're really trying to engineer it to prevent entryism is like the main thing that is like the most critical thing about it. It's like a serious design goal to make something that prevents entryism and makes it very difficult, because that's what I see as the problem with most, you know, kind of right-leaning things. I mean, if you look at like the foundation, like the Ford Foundation, and like any kind of thing set up by a conservative, like rich guy, it always gets converged within a generation to become leftist.
Right.
And like, this will probably happen to Counterfund too, if it's successful, because that's what leftists do, is converge things and take them over. But
they don't build their own stuff.
We're going to make it as difficult as possible and have it last as long as possible.
Right.
Because we're using it as a design goal. It's like, you know, Conquest Second Law is anything not, any organization not explicitly conservative eventually becomes leftist. And so we're going to define this as explicitly right-wing, explicitly ideological, and not try to build an open platform, because like, you know, the free speech, you know, free speech is, it's not, it doesn't fly. Like Twitter is a free speech company. It's totally leftist converged, but they're, you know, all their rhetoric is about, oh, we're for free speech. And then they just say, oh, except hate speech. That doesn't count.
And then you get into what is that? What's the definition of those things? Right. And then here we go. We're back at it again.
And so like that free speech doesn't work as like a shelling point for such a beast. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just be like, oh, we're going to be neutral and we're going to have free speech for everyone. That gets converged. Like experience is very clear. That gets converged.
Do you not believe in Gab, for example, for that reason?
I like Gab and I support Gab. I think, you know, ultimately, yeah, it's like, it's difficult to go with the free speech. You know, I see why they do it. And I agree in their case that's the right way to go. It's good moral high ground. I don't think it's good for Counterfund.
Okay, very good. So yeah, keep us updated, and obviously in terms of what's going on the site, yeah, and the developments and all that stuff. Have you ever looked into, I don't know if this is something that you guys actually are already utilizing or something on the back end of things, but Ethereum, is that anything that's interesting to you guys?
I don't like Ethereum, because what happened with Ethereum is they had rules that said, okay, the code is the law, and whatever is in the code is our terms of service. We obey the code because the code is law. And then somebody found a flaw in their code and, you know, took a bunch of money, and then they forked it and they reverted it because of, you know, it was unpopular. But they made the rules, and the guy who took the money was just, he exploited their rules, but that's what their rules were. So I kind of feel like the people running Ethereum are like not to be trusted. They already violated their own terms of service. Ethereum, the technology, is really interesting. As a tech guy, I have kind of strong feelings about that they're idiots. But like the general concept is good, but the actual implementation sucks. It's, you know, it's too easy to create a digital contract that has flaws and not know what those flaws are and have someone steal all your money. It's kind of like, it's kind of inherently part of the platform that, and humans are just not good at writing software that doesn't have flaws.
But the blockchain thing as a principle doesn't work to uphold those, that the code is always there. It doesn't mean no one can change it or whatever.
The blockchain works great. It's just that Ethereum lets you write code that runs on top of the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And if that code running on top of the blockchain has a flaw, then it lets people steal your money. And the programming language they gave for writing that code is way too complicated. It allows way too complex of code. It allows all kinds of, you know, flaws that, you know, that creep in. And, you know, unless you need to build something like, it's going to be like a rocket ship, you know, it's got to work. It can't be built like Google, where like, oh, if there's a bug, we can fix it tomorrow and, you know, not worry about it. When someone can steal all your money, it's more like, you know, you're writing code for a satellite that's going in orbit and you're not going to be able to change it. It's got to work. And so I feel like Ethereum was poorly designed and allows too much flexibility to the programmer, and people aren't good programmers. And, you know, I am a big cryptocurrency fan. Mm-hmm. I love Bitcoin. You know, I'm a big Bitcoin backer. I'm very long Bitcoin myself. So it's like, this is not like coming from somebody who doesn't believe in cryptocurrencies. I'm hugely into cryptocurrencies. I don't like Ethereum specifically.
Interesting. Yeah. I guess technically it could, I mean, there could be a number of these similar things popping up, and whichever one is the superior one or whatever, that would, I guess, I hope, win at the end, if you will. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying too. It's almost that the humans strive towards objectivity. I get it. It's fine. But as you say, it's almost become like a god in itself, a replacement, something to believe in, when you can just say, but wait a minute, we are human beings. Why don't we just kind of sit down and talk about this and figure it out and help each other out and make sure that it's run by the most appropriate people and it's done honestly. So we're handing over the responsibility to code to a certain extent, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's still room for reasoned human judgment. you know,
right?
Like everything as code is great, but you know, code has only existed for what, 50, 60 years. And frankly, we suck at it. Like as humans, as a species, we're not good at writing code yet. I'm a software engineer. I can tell you, like, we suck at writing code. Like just in general, like humans are not good at it. We write code that has a lot of bugs. It's got a lot of edge cases.
It's because we have flaws. Complicated.
Yeah, I know. But it's, you know, it's still really new industry. You know,
yeah,
50 years is not a long time, and we haven't even figured out the mistakes yet. And so, you know, I like the idea of Ethereum. I think that their flaw was massive amounts of hubris and a little bit overestimation of like how right they could make code be and how they could make it work. And so I'm not a huge fan. There's like an Ethereum Classic that's sort of run by the people who didn't support the fork. And that's like, it still has the same technical flaws underlying, but at least they're not liars. So
okay, interesting. Yeah. No. Well, thanks for the input on that. Always interesting. I read up on it a little while back. Although the inventors, I guess, of it had a little bit of a hard time kind of explaining what it really could do. And I guess that's partially because you can do so many things with it. But anyway, it's an interesting thing. We'll keep an eye on it. But
it's definitely interesting.
Let us know just here by the close of the first segment if there's anything else you'd like to say quickly about Counterfund before we take a break.
Just that I think Counterfund is the wave of the future. I think that a little organization for the movement, even if it's very loose, is really very positive. I think letting people we have all these disputes within the movement, and if there was like some money to fight over, I think it would give people skin in the game and make them like kind of, you can't just like yell at people. You have to like sit down and try to find consensus. And if we can force the disparate personalities in this movement to find consensus over a little bit of money, then who knows what else they'll be able to find consensus over, and who knows what kind of cooperation could come out of that. And that's what I think is really, really promising and interesting about Counterfund.
Or with money, it'll be like 10 times worse, right?
Well,
I'm just kind of joking, but you know what I'm saying, right?
If it's 10% of your money and, you know, you have to figure out what you want, if it's like, you know, 10% of the money that your supporters gave, you're incentivized to try to find like some kind of, you know, use for it that people can agree on. You don't want to just walk away from the table when that 10% was like kind of given via you. So you can't just storm away.
Let's do a hypothetical about that. Let's say if someone did invest in stuff and they did want to walk away from the table because they disagreed, would the funds that they left in there, they can't get those out again?
Nope.
No. Okay.
Nope. Yep. Nope. That's party money.
Yep.
The party decides.
Okay.
You know?
Good to
know. You don't want to walk away from the party because, you know, the party's going to decide how to spend that money. You're walking away from power. People don't walk away from power, man.
Alles für der Partei, right? Sounds good. All right, well, thanks. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. It's counter.fund, where you can read more about the project. Head on over there, check it out. More, of course, info is going to be coming about this, but you have a little bit of an FAQ there already. You have some of the structures explained, mission, everything else. It's interesting, so keep your eye on that. But yeah, we'll take a short break here, ladies and gentlemen. We'll return with Pax Dickinson in the second segment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gents, I just finished the second hour with Pax. A great show. Definitely don't miss it. We spoke about the Islamification of Europe, the connected terrorism that we've seen in England, France, and other countries, and the ongoing great replacement of the native stock by our bureaucratic globalist leaders. Later in the show, we spoke in detail about the consequences of terrorism as well. You know, the police state, the security solutions that they're beginning to roll out now, also how they will use technology against us, and what we can do to stay influential and on top of things in a system that inherently sees us as hostile and want to see us gone. We discussed the need to build our own institutions, but still be tapped into the regular world of business and politics and the private sector as insiders that can act when the time comes, either to prevent something or to help execute something. Some really important proposals and ideas were discussed in the second hour, so definitely don't miss it. Although lately I've been talking about the issue of why the politicians and authorities are not talking about solving terrorism and stopping it. I think I have a pretty good idea of how they're thinking in this regard, and I think I'm onto something. So tune in to the second hour to hear more about this. Now, if you're not yet a member, become one right now. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for a membership. It's only €6 per month, and we have subs from 3 months up to 2 years as one-time payments. We also have a three-month recurring subscription, and this is the best way to support us and make sure that we can continue to grow and expand in our coverage. Now, you've seen that we've stepped up our game in the last month or so. More videos, more diverse range of segments, and we are seeking to bring on other people to produce additional segments with us as well. So definitely make sure that you support us, make sure that we can bring you more of this, and also target newcomers and spread the word about what the globalists actually are up to, who they are, and what they're trying to do. So redicemembers.com, go there right now and tune into the second hour. And of course, after that, you can enjoy our full archives, all shows in full, all the videos, all our live TV shows, and everything else we've done back to our start. And this is the best way to show us some love as well, of course. All right, guys, talk to you after the break. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.